Thank you. I was kind of nervous last night, not because I'm a beginner to give a talk, but about 50% chance when I come to Waterloo, I get lost somewhere in between. I even managed to arrive in Guelph instead of Waterloo a few years ago. In my own defense, my GPS I bought in the US tend to fail as soon as I get into city of Waterloo and so on. So I was always blaming my GPS for bad little signage on Ontario highways. But then last night I was beginning to think about my early life because I'm going to talk about something we worked on more than almost 2 decades ago. And actually, Andy had me come to St. Andrews give a talk in one of his lectures. And the day before my lecture, he instructed me to make a turn at this roundabout and so on. And I got lost. So I almost couldn't make the lecture. It was a part of the graduate course, if I correctly remember. So I had to be there, but I almost got lost. So I finally realized last night it was not the GPS or old signage, but it was me who got lost. Anyways, I'm going to talk about this actually very old problem, at least very old to us, the issue of charge density wave order in LSTO system. So, Andy and Anders, the other speaker today, they're from my old friends from 1990s. That's when basically we were initially working on this issue. So I realize that many of the graduate students these days are not familiar with high-tension cube plates, so I would include a lot of introduction in my talk. So this is the typical phase diagram of LSCO, actually the newest kind of phase diagram. So with strontium doping, lanthanum 2-kappa-4 is anti-ferromagnet, and Anders, I think, will talk about this kind of thing today. And if you dope holes, then it becomes a metal and eventually superconductor. But it turns out that there's a charge density wave order around a 12% doping, and if you keep cooling down, there's spin density wave order. But ordering temperature of spins depend on observational time scale. So if you look at this at neutron, it orders around 30K, but if you use MuSO NMR, which slower probe, then ordering temperature becomes much lower. And in this charge density wave order state, people have been debating what kind of charge density pattern is realized. These are just examples examined by David Hawthorne and co-workers here in Waterloo. So NMR is a local probe, so we can't tell what kind of pattern is formed, but at least we can capture anomaly associated with charge density wave, which actually we did in 1999. And so because of the advancements in technologies in NMR, we can do a much better job, so we decided to revisit this issue. So this is back to basics. So in LSTO cube plates, which has crystal structure like this, it's a tetragonal structure at high temperatures. So suppose, so we are interested in this region about 12.5% or 11.5% doping. If you start from high temperature, the crystal has high temperature tetragonal phase. So each kappa atom is surrounded by 6 octane ions, and this octahedron is sitting upright. And then if you cool down, there's a structure phase transition into low temperature orthorhombic phase because of this rotation of the octahedron. And then eventually superconductivity is realized. Now, there was a surprise in early 1990s. This is from DuPont group, I remember. Actually, I saw this guy giving a presentation at one of those Gordon conferences early 1990s. So what he found was, actually, even before this work, it was recognized that as a function of doping hole concentration, TC seems to have slight dip around 1 over 8 concentration. So it was called 1S anomaly those days. And then these guys in DuPont realized if you substitute neodymium 3-plus ions into lanthanum 3-plus ion sites, so that nominally doesn't change hole concentration, TC is suppressed. And there's even almost, this is completely suppressed around 1H doping level. And they realize that this is related to the structure transition from LTO, which favors high-tissue superconductivity, to low temperature tetragonal phase, which has different kind of rotation. And so symmetry-wise, it is still tetragonal, but it's a different kind of tetragonal phase from the high temperature. And in that phase, superconductivity is almost suppressed when doping concentration is tuned to be around 12%. Now, in the case of a barium 1S phase instead of strontium barium phase, actually it was Graham Look, now at McMaster, who discovered that spin density wave order is achieved at low temperatures. Actually, I was quite surprised when it happened. I still remember the shock I got when I read the paper. When I was a graduate student, he was a graduate student. Now, a few years later, these guys at Brookhaven discovered that actually in this low temperature tetragonal phase, so there's structure phase transition to low temperature tetragonal, as I said before, for 12.5% doping, there's a charge density wave order. So this is an imagined structure of a charge density pattern. So you have basically a spin density wave formed. And then there's a high density of Hall concentration and so on. And also, we immediately worked on this issue, and we realized there's NMR anomalies associated with this. Initially, we incorrectly concluded that charge density wave ordering temperature grows this way, but it turned out that there's another anomaly shown by these dots here. So they turned out to be corresponding to charge density wave order in this system when we change the Hall concentration. Then spin density wave order follows at low temperature. Now, so this is basically the, so by substituting neodymium, you stabilize a low temperature tetragonal phase. So that was believed to be the source favoring a realization of charged density wave ground state instead of high TC superconducting ground state. So that was a common belief, even though TC was already known to have a small dip. Even without neodymium doping, there's a small dip in TC, but a stabilization of charge density wave order in this region was thought to be related to this low temperature tetragonal phase. And then came this. This was also a big surprise to me. So they found that actually this 12% doped LSCO, which remains on orthorhombic structure, also has static spin density wave order. So when you go from one part, so this is, these circles represent copper sites. So copper forms a regular pattern and spins become statically ordered at low temperatures. That happens even in the superconducting LSCO material. So this is a big surprise. Then the natural question is, if you don't have, if you do have neodymium substituted, charge density wave order precedes spin density wave order. So charge density wave comes first, and then spin density wave orders. Charge density wave orders first, spin density wave orders. And then if somebody says, all right, there is also spin density wave order with a neodymium substitution, then the natural question is there also a charge density wave order higher temperature? And I thought immediately there has to be charge density wave order, because of our earlier experience working on these systems. So this is just one example of my graduate work. If you look at the old data, at low temperatures, we didn't even bother to show the data because something crazy is happening. Basically, NMR signal disappears, and NMR signals can't disappear unless something really crazy happens. So we knew something was happening, but we didn't know what it was since like late 1980s. And then came that neutron paper by Tohoku group that said there is spin density wave order. So we decided to check this out very carefully. So the first thing we did was, so by the way, so this is a late 1990s, this is like 16 years ago. So Alan Hunt, my graduate student at the time, synthesized a powder sample of this prototypical charge density wave order system. And he measured NMR intensity carefully, and it turned out that, so this is a charge order temperature, and then NMR signals indeed disappears right at the temperature. And also this and this later turned out to be charge density wave ordered, and of course we found exactly the same thing. Barium seems to have anomaly onset a little lower, because as it turns out later, based on neutron scattering, charge density wave order temperature is also slightly lower. So we were convinced that we can nail this by basically measuring intensity, and also by measuring what is called nuclear spin loss relaxation rate, 1 over T1 divided by temperature, which is related to Q integral of the imaginary part of dynamic electron spin susceptibility measured at NMR frequency, it begins to show uptime below the charge order temperature. So this one, for example, is charge density wave order below this temperature. Now, this kind of anomaly is associated with neodymium moment. So neodymium substituted system is not the best material to investigate this, but whether it's europium or barium, you see an enhancement of spin fluctuation below charge order. So that's consistent with the fact that if you go to about 30 Kelvin with neutron timescale, there's spin density wave order. So spin fluctuations are enhanced. So encouraged by that, actually, to be more precise, this experiment was done even before that in collaboration with Kazuma Hirota, some of you probably recognize his name. So he gave us a crystal of this when we were trying to do auction NMR in LSCO, unrelated to charge density wave order project. And then, of course, signal intensity disappears below about 80 Kelvin. Now, foolishly, I didn't publish this result. So by then, around this time, we knew that this signal intensity loss, and also we found similar results for spin fluctuations enhanced below this temperature. Our thought at the time was charge density wave order must be stabilized by low temperature tetragonal phase. But this one doesn't have low temperature tetragonal phase, so we imagined charge density wave order is hard to achieve, but onset seems to be even higher than prototypical charge density wave material with neodymium doping. So we thought, well, maybe something is wrong with this data of the crystal, so we didn't publish this. And instead we did, we made a powder sample, and for powder sample, basically, we managed to overlook this slow onset in this region. So we ended up concluding that onset of charge density wave order in superconducting LSCO was about 50 Kelvin. Now, so this was actually a big surprise to me, I mean, to a certain extent, even though I knew something was going on from high temperatures since 1980s. And finally, the mystery was solved by comparing the results with neodymium doped version. And basically, the source of the anomaly turns out to be charge density wave order. And of course, this is such a surprise result that we got interviews from Science Magazine, and this PRL has been cited over 200 times. So it was good, but there's one bad news, which was nobody else could see any slightest hint of charge density wave order. So eventually we were attacked by all kinds of people because, let's say, Newton scattlers, they couldn't see any hint of charge density wave order. They said, well, there's no charge density wave order. And other NMR people, competitors said, well, you must be misinterpreting results. There's no charge density wave order. So it became very fashionable around 2001, 2002 to attack us saying there's no charge density wave order. So we had really hard time because every time when I was invited to all kinds of conferences, I was pitted against naysayers who claimed there's no charge density wave order. Newer researchers in this field these days don't even know what was going on some 16 years ago, but there is a fierce debate about it. But eventually, we prevailed. So around 2014, finally, charge density wave order was confirmed. And this is a new set of data from a Stanford group using a crystal from Tohoku University. And this is a charge density order peak measured at slack. So the signal-to-noise ratio is incredibly good. So there's error bar smaller than the data point size. And onset of charge density wave order is right around 80 Kelvin. And that's where we saw anomaly for single crystal. So we were vindicated in that sense. There is charge density wave order. But one thing that was missing was we didn't know why the signal disappeared. As I said, NMR signal intensity is proportional to the number of nuclear spins we detect. The number of nuclear spins in a single crystal is constant as a function of temperature, so it has to be constant. So the only ways to have signal intensity losses A, line position completely changes or split out, or relaxation time becomes incredibly fast. But our equipment was not good enough to decide that those days. But now, fortunately, these days, we have much better equipment. So this is the old equipment used by Allen Hunt for older generation of experiments. So this is the key component of our NMR spectrometer. Now, it has 12 bits averager, and it runs only on Apple G3 computer, you can see top part of it, or older. Yep. Yeah. And that's also true for spins, if I could. For super auction. Exactly. I have no objection. Anyways, so this spectrometer has only 12 bits, so we have to boost the signal intensity before digitizing. So for that, we used to use video amplifiers, and this turns out to be very bad for capturing NMR signals at the extremely fast time scale. I'll come back to that later. And this is a newer spectrometer we have now in our basement lab set up by Sean and Alex in the audience today with the help of the some Hama students. Now this one has 12.4 bits averager. So it can capture small minute change, small signal, and we don't even need a video amplifier. So basically this is all digital spectrum. So we can do what used to be impossible to do back old days. So in NMR measurements, we apply magnetic field, unless we do what is called nuclear polarization. So usually we apply field, and we have Zeeman splitting of nuclear spin energy levels, and we shine the sample with radio frequency wave, and absorption is observed. Now to actually do the signal detection, we apply fast radio frequency pulse called 90-degree pulse, flip nuclear spins, wait for some time tau, typically over the order of 10 microseconds or longer, and then we apply 180-degree pulse, and then spin echo signal is observed. So this is what we call an NMR signal. Now, this spin echo signal appears this much of time after we turn off the radio frequency pulse. On the other hand, since we use amplifiers to amplify tiny voltage of signal, so this signal can be observed at millivolt or much less, whereas a radio frequency pulse in a tank circuit can be kilovolt. So we need to wait until the effect of kilovolt pulse dies out and then capture tiny signal and then digitize. So there's always what is called spectrometer dead time, and this dead time has to be as short as this top line to see the signal. So to avoid the spectrometer dead time, we can make tau longer, but if you make tau too long, then type one. If tau is too long, then tau plan becomes also too long. So signal intensity becomes smaller because of transverse relaxation process, T2. So usually we want to go to as short tau as possible to see the signal, but if tau becomes too short, then the signal appears inside dead region of the spectrometer, nonlinear region, so we wouldn't be able to detect the signal. We have to stay in this a kind of situation to observe the spin echo signal. Now, the thing is, in all the spectrometers, that dead time is about 12 microseconds. So you have to use tau longer than 12 microseconds. But now with the newer kind of digital spectrometer, we can go down to as short as 2 microseconds. Literally, there's no need to make any effort to do measurement with such a short time to capture very fast NMR phenomenon. And it turns out that this is extremely important for investigating a presidential wave order phenomenon based on NMR. So this is a spin echo signal as a function of time for various tau values, like 2 microseconds, 3 microseconds, and so on. So this region is a dead time of our current spectrometer. But back old days, up to about here, we couldn't see the signal. Now, if you measure the intensity of spin echo signal as a function of tau, it decays like this. So again, this shadow region, gray shadow region, we can't see the signal now, but it's not a big deal anymore. when our dead time was as long as 12 microsecond backhaul days, then we lost a lot of signals because of that. Now, if you so this is a temperature dependence of the signal intensity as a function of tau. Now, from 295K to 77K, it appears that signal intensity is getting lost. That's just because NMR line is broadened. So actually, signal intensity is conserved from here to there. I'll come back to that. Now, so here is a comparison of the NMR signal of copper and this charge order material above charge order temperature and below charge order temperature. And so at high temperatures, signal light shape is beautiful Gaussian, and intensity gets smaller and smaller and smaller for longer tau. It's just corresponding to longer tau, signal intensity gets smaller. And if you use long tau, signal intensity gets smaller. So that's what this is. Now, on the other hand, at 40 Kelvin, at very short tau, we are now able to see this ring structure in addition to the central peak. But this part is observable only if you use tau shorter than like 4 microseconds or below. So when we were doing this research back in 1990s or early 2000, we couldn't go shorter than 12 microseconds or 10 microseconds, so we couldn't see this part. So if we stick with, say, 12 microseconds, then this blue just turns into this blue shape. It just broadens a little bit. So if you do a systematic measurement of the line shape as a function of temperature for fixed tau, line broadens a little bit, but a signal intensity gets smaller and smaller and smaller. That's basically what's plotted over here. The signal intensity is lost, conserved down to charge order temperature, but then signal intensity is lost. So this is something we didn't quite understand why the signal is being lost, but now we know why. So if we use instead very short tau, which is now possible using modern spectrometer, basically the lost signal spectral weight is shifted to this wing part. So if you integrate the whole thing, intensity is more or less conserved down to about 40K or 35K-ish until we hit the spin density wave order temperature, which is about 30K. Now, there are many other anomalies as it turns out, and this is something, again, we can do today, but we couldn't do all days. So if you measure the width of that peak, with 12 microseconds, you can hardly see any anomaly, but 2 microseconds, it begins to blow up. Now, long story short, NMR line index in this particular geometry is associated with real part of the Q-integrated dynamical spin susceptibility. This is basically like a Ruderman-Kitte process, or what is now often called as RKKY interaction, which was originally proposed to account for NMR line index. And so, it's associated with the spin susceptibility of the coupled to plane, and that shows mild increase following QD Weiss law, and then begins to blow up below charge order temperature. And also, 1 over T1 is related to Q integral of dynamical structure factor. Basically, this is what neutron people measure as a function of Q and omega, or F. We don't have what we measure is Q integral, and we measure only for NMR frequency. But we use a local probe, so we can see different behavior between the wing-like structure, where 1 over T1 is much bigger, which implies basically spin fluctuations are much, much stronger for nuclear spins appearing in this region. So this part behaves more or less like a normal high tissue superconductor, even below charge order temperature. But as soon as this wing structure appears, nuclear spins associated with some domains of the coupled plane begin to show completely crazy behavior. So the center peak follows the same kind of QD Weiss behavior as before from high temperatures, but the wing part is basically ready to magnetic order. And I showed lanthanum T1 result for neodymium version so on early on. Here, we measure lanthanum T1 for the same crystal, and actually, line width is here. So NMR line width broadens for lanthanum as well, This part is just because of the distributed tilting angle of octahedra because of structure phase transition. And then below charge order temperature, there's additional line broadening. And by measuring the magnetic field dependence, we know this line broadening is associated with magnetic correlation. So magnetism kicks in below charge order temperature, and NMR line begins to broaden, again, also for Lansom. So this part corresponds to basically this part, below charge order temperature, this thing begins to grow very quickly toward spin density wave order. Now we can also measure 1 over T1, and 1 over T1 begins to have upturn below charge order temperature. But one thing important to emphasize here, this is something we already emphasized 16, 17 years ago, but not many people really understood. So with neutron timescale, spin density wave order temperature is said to be 30 Kelvin. But NMR timescale, it's much slower measurement. We don't, so normally if it was just ordinary second order magnetic phase transition, NMR relaxation rate must diverge at this phase transition temperature. But we don't see that until we go to much lower temperature. So this is said to be aggressive behavior. So depending on the observation timescale, spin's behavior look a little different. One more thing to note is, I don't have the time to go into the details, but below charge order in temperature, when we do the measurement of T1, we have to do certain fit, and that fit has extra parameter, which is supposed to be 1. Now it deviates from 1 because of lattice fluctuations affecting T1 near the structure phase transition temperature, but also it begins to deviate from 1 below charge order temperature. The implication is basically the system becomes inhomogeneous below this temperature, and that temperature is the charge order temperature. So depending on the length scale of the measurement, there are different kinds of inhomogeneity involved in LSCO, because after all, you have strontium ions sitting in the lattice, so that obviously creates inhomogeneity. So we knew from early on that results in some distribution of local Hall concentration. So for example, this is what is called nuclear quadrupole resonance line shape. 11% of sample, shown here, some parts of the 11% of sample behaves more like 16% of sample, while some other parts of 11% of sample behave more like 7%. Basically, holes are not entirely uniformly distributed into the coupled plane. So depending on where you look at behavior of coupled plane is somewhat different. And if you measure T1, the functional frequency, you can establish there's a hole concentration variation throughout coupled plane. So there's already strontium-induced inhomogeneity in the system. And then we have additional inhomogeneity, magnetic inhomogeneity kicking in below charge order, and also obviously charge density wave order sets in. So the question is, how much of Hall concentration variation happens in the charge order state? So for example, if the 11% of sample splits into like 16% of sample and 7% of sample, I mean, region, 11% doped coupled to plane splits into a high charge density wave region, low charge density wave region, then this line shape has to split into two peaks, for example. So if charge density modulation is big, we should be able to see a big change. But if it's small, we don't see big change. And the answer is basically, charge density modulation is really small. And of course, that's why, back to Bruce's point, and this is related to the fact that scattlers had tremendous difficulties to capture this super state. And so this is the above charge order temperature, and this is below, and the line shape more or less the same. We have additional peak over here because this is not isotope in each sample. So this part corresponds to this part, and this part response to this, but they are just a signal that's associated with the nearest neighbor of G. So my time is up. So we are finally vindicated, and then we do confirm, it was confirmed that LSCO has charge density wave order, and we see various anomalies using local NMR probe, which has the technique advanced tremendously over the past decade or two. And so charge density modulation happens, but that's not the direct reason why we see NMR normalized. It's more because charge density wave order leads to all kinds of magnetic anomalies. That's why NMR turns out to be so sensitive. And the modulation of charge density mass is very small because we don't see big change in G energy line shape. Thank you. Dave.
Hold it.
So in LSCO is orthorhombic, which means, and generically it'll be twin, right? So there'll be twin domains and domain boundaries. I know at least one of the diffraction papers made a case that the charge density wave order is actually pinned or nucleated around these domain walls, because at the domain wall, you have a LTT-like distortion of your architecture as opposed to diagonal distortion architecture. I'm wondering if the NMR study you've done here would shed any insight on whether that's true.
No, we don't have any say. We don't know.
Okay.
Andy.
Could you go back to the slide where you showed us the onset of the, yeah, there we go. So you said that the volume average begins to grow dramatically at T charge.
This one, actually, we didn't divide it by T. So susceptibility is actually divided by temperature.
Ah-ha-ha.
Sorry.
Okay. And then, so the interpretation of that, when you say glassy, what you're meaning is there's some it's temporal fluctuations of the order that the neutrons are taking a quick snapshot.
So as long as fluctuation becomes slow enough compared with, say, media electron volt resolution,
yeah,
and then neutron people say, okay, there's order.
Yeah, yeah.
But NMR, to see order in NMR timescale 10 microseconds, kappa spin has to be static for 10 microseconds,
sure,
but there's still fluctuation. The fluctuation continues all the way down to about like several Kelvin.
And this is also quite widely seen in manganites, is that right as well?
I want to be careful. Okay. I didn't work on that. But yeah, I don't think people did much of this kind of study in manganite, but.
Okay, okay. No, I'm interested because of ruthenate physics. So in the bilayer ruthenate up at 8 Tesla, there's now this observation from the Hayden group, very similar to this, that they see incommensurate so-called ordering. But the NMR from the Kyoto group is very like what you're showing.
Mm-hmm.
So they see no divergence of 1
okay.
over T1
yeah. Yeah,
at the apparent phase transition time. Okay, thanks.
Actually, you showed a phase diagram at the very beginning that that had the charge ordering, I think, go up but not come down, actually, in LSCO. Yes, right. And of course, you were looking at the 0.11 sample.
Yeah, we are right over here.
Right. So is that the current status, that it's not a dome, it simply goes up and then peters out?
Well, basically there's nothing going on here. So from NMR viewpoint, there's no anomaly whatsoever, around 15% or higher. It slightly depends on oxygen concentration, but above 1A, significantly above, you don't see anything. Significantly below, this is still people are walking.
But you would expect that to be a dome, though. Is that correct?
It has to be dome.
Uh-huh.
I believe.
See. I see.
Yeah. In the case of neodymium, so this is our phase diagram as of 2001.
Right.
So So actually, data points are hidden behind this neutron data, but there are data points here, and here where we observe NM anomalies as well. And it disappears slowly.
Okay, so let's thank Takashi for an interesting talk.